Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Republicans propose adding new provisions to the state's criminal abortion ban. Coming up, why their effort is likely to be short-lived. Plus, the Assembly passes legislation to require schools with high crime to hire police officers. We explain how the measure is dividing lawmakers. And looking ahead to 2024, which Republicans are showing an interest in taking on Democrat Tammy Baldwin next year. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for March 17th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., a busy week at the state capitol. The assembly was in session, but first I want to start about an announcement from Republicans related to the 1849 abortion ban. Republicans proposed a bill to update that law to add exceptions and to clarify the language of when a mother's life is at risk. So here's more details about the bill. Abortion would only be allowed during the first trimester, which is 12 weeks for victims of rape or incest. And the criteria of how that would be determined was not included in this bill. It also clarifies that medical professionals would not face felony charges if they believe an abortion is necessary to save the life of the mother. Now, this comes as some doctors were fearful of performing abortions if the mother was having some issues during her pregnancy because they faced that maybe they could be thrown in jail. Now, this bill was very quickly rejected by Governor Tony Evers, who has long stated that he will not sign any bill unless it goes back to the same rights that were in place in Wisconsin before Roe v. Wade was overturned. So let's first hear from the bill sponsor, Senator Valkowski, who talks about those kind of certain challenging situations that some mothers that she said she heard from that were in who had some medical issues during the pregnancy, and Governor Evers just reiterating that this is not going to happen or become law.
I had a woman call my office probably about a month ago. Her and her husband, she was pregnant with their third child. Very much a baby that they wanted. There was complications in the pregnancy, and the baby was non-viable. The baby was dying. In Wisconsin, she was not allowed to deal with that situation. She would have to wait. They would have to wait until her life was in danger. Their doctor advised them that it was not wise to wait. So her and her husband made the decision to leave the state of Wisconsin, take off work, go to a neighboring state to terminate that pregnancy. What did that mean to them? Number one, it was the tragedy of losing the child, but then it was the lost income from work, the additional cost of traveling out of state, and the financial burden because now she's out of network. That's not what Republicans want for our constituency. So the bill will be coming out today that updates the life of the mother to deal with today's medical conditions and technology, and then the exception for rape and incest in the first trimester.
If I understand the bills correctly, yes, I would veto them. I haven't changed my mind on anything. I've always said it's important to get back to what the state did before Roe v. Wade was dumped by the U.S. Supreme Court, and these bills do not do that. Yes, I think it's somewhat political, but it shouldn't be. I mean, they know where I stand. They know where the people of Wisconsin stand. So the reason for doing it is unknown, but if it's not in concert with what the people of Wisconsin want, and knowing that I would likely veto it, I'd say that's probably a political statement.
So, J.R., let's first talk about the timing of this bill. Now, it's going to take some time to circulate and, you know, to have public hearings, et cetera. So Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said that this bill is not even going to come before the April 4th election. He said his ultimate goal is that Dan Kelly is elected. So, but we know the fate of abortion laws are, you know, at stake in that race. But going back to just kind of the unusualness of how this process works, where it felt like the bill was introduced at 9 a.m. and it was already killed, you know, within an hour in the Capitol.
I asked people this week, last time they saw one leader of one house unveil a bill at 9 a.m. and the other in the other house early afternoon say it's not going anywhere. So that was unique. But it underscores, too, that we've talked about this before with exceptions to the abortion ban. Republicans do not have the support in their caucuses, both of them, in both houses, to get a bill through with that. Now, Robin said with the assembly, he was optimistic he'd get to 50 votes by the time it was all said and done. Falskowski acknowledged we don't have the votes in the Senate. And there are people in the Senate, Republican caucus, who have deeply held personal beliefs that you should not allow exceptions for rape or incest. The challenge is, politically, that's not a good place to be in Wisconsin, or generally speaking, in the country, where the public is. Timing's really odd, too, because they dropped this just less than 3 weeks before the Supreme Court race. So if you're trying to put to rest an issue like abortion, why are you dropping it that close to an election when abortion is a key issue, not knowing you have the votes to pass the bill and maybe even try to take it off the table? Democrats are not going to help you on this if you're a Republican. A couple reasons. One, they don't believe in doing anything to codify the 1849 ban, because if you were to pass exceptions that modified that statute from 4 years ago, you would strengthen the case that law is valid. There is a lawsuit right now, right, from Josh Call, the Democratic Attorney General, trying to challenge that law on a number of grounds, including that it is so old it's unenforceable. So there's a challenge there. Two, they don't philosophically believe in what you're trying to do. They want to get rid of the ban, period. So it's just interesting timing. Did not make it look like Republicans have their stuff together when it comes to this issue, or not on the same page in how they dress what has become a driving issue in campaigns, period.
Yeah, and Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu told me in late December that he didn't even want to take up the abortion issue at all during this session, because he said it would, quote-unquote, put his members through a tough vote. So, I mean, his rejection, the timing was, of course, unique that that's happened so quickly with two GOP leaders very split on issue. But it was almost predictable, even when Falskowski says, well, we don't have the votes, but we're still going to try. So it's just very interesting dynamic that we're seeing with this bill.
Then add in, not long after the bill's unveiled, you have Wisconsin Right to Life and Pro-Life Wisconsin, the two biggest anti-abortion groups,
right,
in Wisconsin, both knocking the bill. Wisconsin Right to Life said it had acknowledged there may be some changes needed, the 1849 ban, but had issues with some of the language. What they were getting at was, with the proposed exceptions for rape or incest, there would not be a mechanism requiring you to go report the authorities if you've been raped or molested to get the abortion. So those folks worry you're opening the door to basically a 12-week exception to the abortion ban, period. Pro-Life Wisconsin has a much more stringent stance on the issue. They want nothing allowed, period. So now, if you have a Supreme Court race in a couple weeks that's a base-on-base election, mm-hmm, you have just deflated some of your base about an issue they care passionately about ahead of an election where Dan Kelly needs all the help he can get.
Now, there was another bill introduced at that press conference that would allow pharmacists to prescribe birth control. That did have bipartisan support in the past, so we'll see where that goes, just to kind of follow up on other ways that they're trying to highlight this, mm-hmm, issue. Now let's move on to the latest headlines in the state Supreme Court race. This week, Dan Kelly appeared at the Milwaukee Press Club at an event solo. His rival, Janet Protasiewicz, declined. But during that, he really just took the opportunity to really hammer Protasiewicz, specifically about a lot of campaign ads that have been running against him. He said that she's been slandering him in these ads and called her accusations preposterous and stupid. Now, Kelly also called his opponent unqualified to serve on the state's highest court while he was there at the press club. Now, a spokesman for Protasiewicz responded to these statements, saying that as a veteran prosecutor who has dedicated her career to protecting the rights of victims, Protasiewicz has earned the reputation for being fair and impartial. So, you know, you can't blame Kelly for taking the opportunity, mm-hmm, to respond to. I mean, he has a lot more money being spent against him on these campaign ads. Before we get into this, though, let's just hear a clip from Kelly at this event.
But the ads that she is paying to be run against me are nothing but a dirty pack of lies. So she says, how could Justice Kelly, how could he represent someone who is accused of sexually assaulting children? And she left the implication that I had represented them at trial. That simply isn't true. So she says, the only reason that he represented them is because he likes the kind of crime his clients were accused of committing. And that is preposterous. There's no intelligence behind it, there's no reasoning, and there are no facts.
So these are really just the arguments that we've been hearing a lot about, and we'll actually get to see both candidates go head-to-head next Tuesday when you and I and Channel 3000 WICS will be hosting a debate. So we'll see a little bit more of that rhetoric and be able to have both candidates to respond to more things.
And, you know, the question remains, when's a Calvary coming for Dan Kelly? So I've been doing my spreadsheet with the spending. I'm now up to $30 million overall, which is twice the previous national record for a state Supreme Court race. Post-primary, we're just shy of $21 million. Of that, just north of $6 million has been spent to help Kelly. That is not a great place to be. And he keeps saying that groups are going to come. One thing to watch, the Republican State Leadership Committee has a judicial fairness initiative. They were a big player in 2019 with Brian Hagedorn. That race, Lisa Neubauer was kind of the perceived Dem/liberal candidate. Hagedorn, the conservative. Neubauer had a big edge early on, spending-wise. RSLC came in late, really helped Brian Hagedorn. They're doing their first mail pieces now. But what's different this time is I'm not seeing any liberal spending drop off. In fact, it's getting more intense, if anything. So conservatives hope they're going to have a repeat of 2019 where this kind of late surge helped, but I'm not seeing the conditions to open the door to that. And where is Daniel Kelly's at?
I was just going to bring that up.
So it'll be 2 weeks on Tuesday until the election. I've not seen a radio or TV ad from him. I've asked numerous people. None of us can remember a single major party candidate or nominee for court or any office who had not run a single in the primary or the general 2.5 weeks out. It's just really unique. Now, others doing the work for him. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce is on the air. Fair Courts America on the air as well. But it's just not matching the liberal effort.
And all those ads that you mentioned by those groups are anti-Protasiewicz. Mm-hmm. There are no campaign ads still lifting up Kelly.
Yeah.
And that's also a little unusual.
I got the first radio ad from Fair Courts that is kind of a mix of knocking Protasiewicz and pro-Kelly, but there's no pure pro-Kelly.
Right.
There's no like
not solo,
sing his praises for 30 straight seconds. So that's, again, unique because he's getting defined. Also, if you look at like the messaging going on right now, pay attention where Protasiewicz runs the abortion ads. They're mostly in Madison and Milwaukee. In Green Bay, Wausau, Eau Claire, La Crosse, they're more of a message on accusing Kelly being corrupt, representing child molesters, like these kinds of issues, projecting strength as a former prosecutor. And part of the reason people tell me is the abortion issue plays very well in a November election for Democrats, social liberals. In April, it's a little bit more dicier to kind of push that one because a more older, whiter, more conservative electorate. But what they're doing is they're capturing the voters in Madison, Milwaukee, most driven by that issue, most receptive to it, and trying to avoid the backlash, the possibility of fueling the other side, right? The
right.
Anti-abortion folks mm-hmm. outstate. So it's a very smart approach with the issues and how they're doing it as well.
And speaking of the SCOTUS debate, you can tune in on Tuesday. It will be broadcasted here on Wisconsin Eye at 12:45. And like I said, we'll be on the panel, so it should be a good one.
Yeah.
All right, let's now wrap up. Assembly was in session. Let's kind of wrap up what they covered here. There were several bills, but kind of the biggest ones dealt with SROs, which are referred to school resource officers, and kind of the overall theme that we've seen with Republicans with letting parents know a little bit more of what's going on in the school district. So one of the bills would require school districts who make frequent calls to police, they would actually have to have 100 or more incidents occur. And then if there's 25 of those, a quarter of those that result in arrest, that school district would have to hire an SRO. There was another kind of companion bill that went with this that would mandate all public and private high schools to track how often schools or how often students would commit crimes on school property. Schools would then have to report this to DPI, and then it would be on what's called the school report card, where parents, if they wanted to see how school districts rank, can read a little bit more about this. Now, the overall argument from Republicans is that this would make schools safer. This comes on the heels of many multiple fights at the Wauwatosa School District in recent days. And we're just seeing a little bit more incidents occur even in MPS. Now, it's important to note that right now, SROs are not in MPS or Madison. Those are the two of the state's largest school district. SROs were voted by both districts in 2020, which was in the wake of the George Floyd summer protests. But Democrats believe that this is not necessary, that there should be instead more investments in student services to prevent fights in the first place, get the resources that kids need. So let's just hear from the floor debate on this bill specifically.
Esther Oil should be viewed as a common sense approach in our overall goal to stem the violence that has been rapidly escalating at schools since students returned to full-time in-person learning. While I would certainly not discount the benefits of schools providing mental health resources in an attempt to stem the growing tide of violence, as officers are called to schools at an alarming rate, it is clear the status quo can't continue. I worry that should we stay on the current path, more kids and faculty will be attacked or subject to other jarring incidences. 34 Milwaukee public schools made 778 calls for public service. This is a notable increase over the previous semester and the fall of 2021. The Wauwatosa School District showed several violent incidences breaking out at school sporting events. This led to several staff members being violently assaulted, as can be seen in the obtained footage. I think we can all agree that this behavior should not be tolerated.
This is not about SROs. This is about local communities being able to determine how they're going to deal with that problem. And I guess I would say to the rest of you, many of you whom of you are old white men like me, how dare we make a judgment about what Milwaukee is doing in their schools? We have no experience. The SRO that I spoke to looked at me in horror when I told him about this bill. He said, we can't just throw any police officer and make him a school resource officer. This is a really specialized job that requires lots of training. If you want to be an education committee and you want to solve the violence in our schools, let's start funding some nonviolent crisis intervention training for everybody in our schools.
Now, there's also a COVID component to this bill, JR, that Republicans propose using federal COVID relief aid to reimburse schools who have to hire SROs. But there was a document by the Department of Administration that raised some red flags saying that, you know, these funds can only be used for limited purposes and they cannot be used for the specific reason. So that was kind of a one thing that we heard during debate on the floor as well. But overall, this has been a theme for Republicans just trying to get more officers and, you know, police in high crime areas.
Party-line votes don't bode well for a bill being signed into law this session. And if you give Governor Reeves an excuse of trying to force him to spend ARPA money on something that he doesn't want to spend it on, it's probably not going to get done.
Right.
So that's your outlook for that bill.
One other thing I do want to highlight is Republicans also made the move to refer a bill back to JCRER that was all about conversion therapy ban. This all stemmed from, actually, this goes back to almost two, three years ago now, of how DSPS, a board through DSPS voted to implement their own ban, and then JCRER always says, nope, you can't act without the legislature. So that is just something else that was acted on this week. Also, speaking about the floor, just want to highlight that for the first time since 2018, the Legislative Black Caucus was able to pass their resolution honoring members of the Black community. Now, what their specific resolution included was the state's first Black woman to become a major general in the U.S. Army Reserve and its first Black appeals court judge. So this is the first time it's passed the GOP-controlled assembly because other ones that were authored by the Legislative Black Caucus, previous versions included controversial individuals, including former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick and Jacob Blake, who was shot by a white police officer, which really started the whole unrest and the violent protests in Kenosha in 2020. So this was also something that they could celebrate, and we saw some bipartisanship on the floor.
Yeah, I'm watching to see the state Senate will be in next week if they take up the same resolution. Worth noting that 2018 is the last time that the caucus got the resolution it wanted passed. There's also a Republican version passed that year. Since then, it's been bogged down all kinds of controversy about who want to be honored. I'm just curious to watch if it passes both houses this time around for the first time in a while.
All right. Now we want to highlight fundraising by the state party specifically. I spoke to Brian Schimming with the Republican Party Wisconsin and Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party Wisconsin, on Monday here on Newsmakers. And we talked a little bit about the constant struggle for the Republican Party specifically about raising funds. I mean, they have been competing against the powerhouse under Wickler's leadership for a very long time. And in the past few elections, I mean, they've been outspent 2-1 in many, many statewide elections. So when I asked Shamim about this, he said when it comes to how much they've raised in the first 3 months, they are on pace and expected to break records from 2021 and records raised in 2022. So this is just this 3 month period specifically. So what that means is that they are close to surpassing about 692,000 that the party raised last year during those first 3 months. So it kind of just shows as Shimin is trying to play catch up because, you know, we reported and talked about it on the show just about a month after he got into that role, he only was able to get about $55,000 raised. So he's really picked up a little bit, it seems, but it still doesn't really come close to what Democrats have raised in that same period, which was about $3.5 million.
Yeah, and what context is needed is we have a Supreme Court race in the ballot in April that will turn the ideological control of the court. Go back the last 2 years, what we have with the ballot, we had a DPI race. So no offense, state superintendents and their races, but they're not generally really expensive things. And go back the other year, there was no statewide race in the ballot. A couple appeals court races. You should be raising more money than you did in 2022 and 21 because of the stakes of what's going to happen in April.
All right, let's get to stock picks this week. Speaking of Ben Wickler, he is rising this week, and he is going to be seeking re-election for his chair position.
So I'd be surprised from my call so far if anybody challenges Ben Wickler. His announcement was more of a declaration of I'm back than it was really I'm running. So on Saturday, he spoke to this county chairs group, said I'm going to run again. Immediately after news broke he's going to run, I saw tweets from Tammy Baldwin, Tony Evers, like every Democratic lawmaker you can think of saying this is a great thing. That should tell you something about how excited they are about having Ben Wickler back. I'm sure Joe Biden wants Ben Wickler back. Why? Because Ben Wickler is a fundraising machine. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. He's taken these contacts from his work at MoveOn.org, paired that with being in a state that's perpetually a swing state presidential elections, with Governor Evers in the East Wing as a powerful fundraising ally, and turned it into this machine. They gave Janet Prozewich $2.5 million the day after the primary last month. That tells you like how much money they have laying around. Now, this also answers the question, what's Wickler want to do? There have been rumors for a while about will he run for public office, do something else besides chair? Might he have ambitions for national chair someday? Democrats, though, breathe a sigh of relief. They have him at least through 2024. That's what they're worried about. He'll be at the helm through another presidential election where we're going to be again, eye of the storm for what's going to happen.
Absolutely. And mix this week is a lot of your reporting this week, JR, specifically about the U.S. Senate field and Republicans that are exploring a bid against incumbent Tammy Baldwin.
So Scott Mayer is a Franklin businessman. Talked to him this week. He said he's exploring a run. What's worth a note there is he's talked to Ron Johnson, members of the congressional delegation, Paul Farrell, former state party chair. He's doing his due diligence. He also was told if you're going to run, it's probably going to take $10 to $20 million of your own money to launch a campaign. One of his things is, do I want to spend that much of my money? He says, I have it. Do I want to spend it on running for public office? Now, former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark also apparently says he's not closing the door to running for anything in 2024. Worth noting that he's got a new podcast. So people are skeptical about how serious he is about running for anything, or does he want to be back in this spotlight, keep his kind of time going. Mayor's an interesting case. Ron Johnson came in the private sector, ran in 2010, kind of caught lightning in a bottle. Will Mayor be able to do something similar? We'll see. You have to go through your other like list of possibles. Mike Gallagher, actually, Mayor, when we talked to Mike Gallagher about 2024, wouldn't show Gallagher told him, but met with him. People tell me Gallagher is Scott McConnell's dream candidate, right? He's got $3 million in the bank at the end of last year, high profile, chairing the China committee, definitely somebody he'd want to have. But if you don't get Gallagher, is Mayor the one that can do it? What about a Tom Tiffany from up north? Would you see a Kevin Nicholson come back and run again? Eric Hovde, massive businessman, he's talking about it. So there are options out there. But as we sit here right now, there's no clear, like, this is the person to challenge Tammy Baldwin, and no like top tier candidate looking at the field. Also, don't forget, the Republicans have a great map next year. Montana is up, West Virginia is up. That's also going to make Republicans go, okay, am I better to spend money in Montana against John Tester, or West Virginia against Joe Manchin, or go take on Tammy Baldwin, a very, very good fundraiser who won by 10.8 points in 2018. Now, the danger for Democrats is, it's harder to break away from the top of the ticket when it's president and Senate than it is Senate and governor. If Joe Biden doesn't do well, is that going to weigh Baldwin down? Possibly. But I get the impression, no matter who they get right now, they know they're an underdog to Tammy Baldwin next year.
Also, the timing, too, right? I mean, there should be an announcement soon. But
Barnes.
It differs every year now.
Yeah. Barnes got Lewski, Lazary, Nelson. They're all in by spring or summer of 2021.
Yeah.
So there's still a time. Mayor said by Labor Day is his goal to, okay. to get in there. So we'll see.
All right. And falling this week is Republicans, kind of going back to our first topic of the show about the issue of abortion, because this has been putting them in a pickle of trying to address the issue, but they can't even get their own members on board.
They've done this to themselves, right? So you have a group of people saying, we need to be able to look reasonable on this issue. And they tried this week and proved we can't look reasonable because we can't agree on what to do. Democrats, again, are saying, you guys have this problem, you figure it out. Well, how do they figure it out? You can't get a pill passed with exceptions for rape or incest. You can't talk about expanding the definition of life of the mother because you have a segment of the both caucuses saying, I don't want exceptions to be added to what's going on. They like the ban. And I'm not trying to knock their personal beliefs. That's where they're at. That's not where the public is at. And that is the challenge for them. In November, we expected a good Republican year in 2022 because you had a Democrat in the White House who was struggling. Didn't happen. Abortion was a driving issue in that. I've had Republicans tell me, until we figure out this issue, Jared, we will not win the statewide race in Wisconsin, period. Now, that may be overly dramatic, but
the issue's not going anywhere.
No.
That's the thing.
So how do you solve it?
Mm-hmm.
How do you solve it? Their best bet, honestly, may be to have Janet Protasiewicz win the Supreme Court race, the court overturn the 1849 ban, and then go from there.
Right.
How else do you fix it? What race is not going to be touched by this issue going forward? Then the Supreme Court race, can we talk about earlier, you have to nuance that issue a little bit more in a spring electorate because it's different than a November one, right? But November elections, they're not winning on this issue. I'm watching the 2C in the 8th Senate District. You have Jody Habesh-Sinikin, first ad kind of going for Dan Canoda this week, all about abortion. Now, that is a 55% Republican seat. It should not be competitive in a normal year. Is this a normal environment with the Supreme Court race driving turnout top of the ticket? We'll see. But I'm watching to see, can that one issue turn a 55% Republican seat into a swing one in April, the April electorate? It's going to be fascinating to watch.
It will be a true test, I mean, of how much voters are still energized and motivated to go to the polls. Because typically, April elections can sometimes be a little bit of sleepers, sometimes depending on who's on the ballot, right? But with the issue of abortion, I mean, people are still motivated. And just we shouldn't just say Democrats. I mean, there are some Republicans who are still not, you know, in support of what our state laws are right now. And it's kind of swayed them some different ways. So it will definitely be, like you said, fascinating to watch and what happens in about 2 weeks now.
Yes.
All right. That will do it for this week's show. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.